Good evening, everybody. This is Josh Spicer from GameWisdom.com, where we examine the art and science of games. Welcome to another episode of the Perceptive Podcast. Fortunately, James couldn't make it for this one, but we have a great cast tonight. We're speaking to another indie developer team today. They've been working on this is going to be the latest, I think, tongue twister on this cast, a mobile MOBA game called Titan Brawl. It's been out, I think, for a few months since we last spoke. For those of you who have been fans of GameWisdom, you know that I interviewed them through an email interview a few months ago, but we're actually going to sit down and talk with two of the members of Omnidrone tonight about developing the game and a little bit more about designing a MOBA title. Because as you know, this is one of the main genres that has certainly risen up over the last few years, and I think this is the first time we'll actually have a chance to sit down and talk a little bit about it more here on the Perceptive Podcast. But let's welcome our guest tonight. So, please welcome from Omnidrone, lead designer Damien, and
hey,
Hi, Damien. And I'm afraid my mouth is very dry, so I'm going to mispronounce this. I'm sorry about this. Nuria Gurman.
Yeah, it's Nuria.
Nuria. Sorry about that. I should be getting better with names like this. I've been speaking to more international guests over the last few years.
That's okay. I'm actually not a developer. I work within the marketing department.
Mm-hmm. All right. So it's great to have both of you on today. And for those of you listening to the cast, we are speaking. You guys are located in Madrid, Spain. Is that right?
No, in Barcelona.
Oh, Barcelona. Oh, I'm saying.
It's very different.
We have the beach.
Yes, nice. We have the beach.
Nice. So it's great to have both of you on tonight. And like I said, you guys have been working on Titan Brawl for, I believe at this point, has it been released worldwide? Because I know we were speaking about this a few months ago.
Yeah, so actually we started something like 1 year ago. Mm-hmm. Then we went in soft launch quite a long time ago. I think it was June or something.
Mm-hmm.
And but now we are live in iOS and Android since only a few months. So it's pretty fresh.
Great. Congratulations to you and the rest of your team.
Yeah.
So
it probably launched around 2 weeks ago.
All right. And I know from our email, you guys have, this was definitely an idea that you guys wanted to do to really create a MOBA for the mobile space, because it's not a genre that is typically seen on mobile devices.
Yeah. Yes, pretty dope. Actually, I think when we started, it was not the point was not really to absolutely do a MOBA. Mm-hmm. So it just came along, like we had a concept, and then we prototyped, we experienced a lot, and then at the end, it just ended up being a MOBA, which fits to a MOBA genre. Mm-hmm. But it's not like we're focusing on making the MOBA for mobile.
Mm-hmm.
It's more how it came out, basically.
All right. Now, I definitely have questions for both of you regarding Titan Brawl, but to get things started, for people listening to the cast who may not have heard of Omnidrone before, could you talk a little bit about your backgrounds and kind of how the studio got started?
Okay, so let's do the long story. So basically, like 10 years ago, I think, Gerald Fernandez created the first mobile game company in Spain.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was called Micro Jox, some Catalan name. Yeah, mm-hmm. Can you say?
Micro Jox.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. And so he built a team. Then at some point he was part of Digital Chocolates, which was pretty big back then, like 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. It was led by Trip Hawkins, the guy who made one of the creator of Electronic Arts, and then 3DO, like the guy who made Heroes of Might and Magic.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the Digital Chocolate time. And then, so at some point, it was bought by Ubisoft. And then 3 years ago, Gerald and a couple of guys from this Ubisoft studio decided to leave and create a brand new indie company. So this is a short story. So in the end, it's all like connection in Europe with Digital Chocolate and Ubisoft.
All right. Anything to add, Nuria?
Yes, well, the main idea was to run away from corporativism. So Gerard's idea was to make a company that was flexible, small, and that it was led by the team.
Mm.
That's one of the things that makes Omnidrone unique to my point of view.
Mm-hmm. Now, with Omnidrone, is Titan Brawl your first official project, or have you worked on smaller games or other titles in the past?
So we released, the first game we released was called Dwarves and Dragons. Unfortunately, nobody in this room was working on this project. Okay. But basically, it was a kind of Clash of Clan game. And so I think for the team, the main takeaway was just that it was just too similar to Clash of Clan, and there was nothing innovative. So first, players just don't want to have this, and second, it's not very good when you talk to Apple or Google to get featuring and so on if you are not innovative. Mm-hmm. So I think that was a big switch then in the creative direction. We just realized how much we needed to be innovative and try to create new games. Mm-hmm. So that's basically what we focus on doing now. It's we want to be innovative. We have actually the size and the flexibility to be innovative.
And that's something that is definitely coming more and more important, especially in the mobile space today, as we've seen a lot of talks and challenges with trying to establish yourself as a mobile company. After the last few years where we saw a lot of the bigger names like King, Zynga, and Rovia kind of establish themselves, it's becoming a lot more challenging for a new developer to sort of, you know, carve a space out in the mobile market.
Yeah, I don't know. So you still have the big names in the top. So yes, you have King, you have Supercell, and so on and so on. But I think it's totally doable for very small studios to make it. Like another example of guys with a completely different model is some guys from Finland called Future Play, and so they are not successful as crazy as Supercell. But they make games which are pretty small in size. I think they take like 6 months to make them, and then they become pretty successful. So it's not like the massive players like King and Supercell, but when you have 20 guys working in the company, I think it's totally doable. There are a lot of examples. Future Play is just one. The guys who make The Walking Dead. I think it's pretty open. In mobile, I think it's pretty open. It's really tough, but if you come up with a cool concept and everything well done, I think you can totally make it.
Mm-hmm. Now, another question that I have for both of you, and this is a question I like to ask all the international guests that we have on the Perceptive Podcast. I'm just curious about, what is, I guess, the general state of the game industry where you guys are located? And that, of course, was Barcelona. So, for people listening to this cast, since my audience is pretty much, I think, located in the U.S. primarily, how is the, I guess, the state of the game industry in Barcelona, Spain?
Well, there are many large companies based in Barcelona at the moment. Mm-hmm. That we have Gameloft, King, which is now Blizzard Activision. We have two Ubisoft companies, Social Points, and many others. And it turns out it's a very good place at the moment to have startups. Like gaming startups are blooming at a really fast rate.
Yeah, there are a lot of game startups. Like it's also, I think, in Barcelona, they are really into new technologies. And basically, if you want to build a startup, it's very good to do it here because there are a lot of people. So it's always important. Like in the Valley, for instance, it's very good because you can get the brains and so on. So there are already a lot of people in Barcelona, and also the city and the government is really helping. Like they are helping for everything. It's very easy to just create your startup here. Much easier than in a city like Paris, for instance.
All right.
Even the city itself, it's very attractive for a lot of people. The weather, the beach, the nature. everything.
Good.
So it's already a plus.
And I got to ask this. How is the weather right now in Barcelona? Because, I mean, over here, it's been crazy with the temperature.
Okay. Today is a bad example because it rained like crazy. Yeah.
Nice.
But you can go out with just with a t-shirt, which is still nice.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Here it's just been incredibly windy. For those of you listening to this cast right now, we're recording this Thanksgiving week here in the U.S. And on the East Coast, we've just been getting like hit by crazy wind. It's been like hot for like the last 2 months, and now we're finally getting that like winter weather starting to show up here.
Well, because it's not a hurricane or something.
Yeah. And that's... And a few years ago, we actually like, got hit by, like, for like the first time in New Jersey, where I'm located, we got hit by an earthquake, and I had never felt one. All of a sudden, we're like, what the hell was that? The house just shook.
In New Jersey?
Yeah.
Are they supposed to have earthquakes there?
No, we're not supposed to have earthquakes. Well, we had, like, one, like, in the entire time I've lived here, and, like, no one knew what the hell that was.
What the fuck? Yeah. How does it feel? It must be so weird.
Yeah, it's like, all of a sudden, like, the house just shows, like, wait, what just happened to, like, a car drive by? And then someone said, oh, we got hit, we just felt a small earthquake. Like, really? That just happened here?
There wasn't an earthquake once, but I thought there was somebody under my bed. It seemed way more likely than the earthquake at this time. The real story.
Yeah, so we'll stop talking about the game. We'll just talk about the weird weather we've been having. That'll be this cast. All right. Getting back to Titan Brawl and Omnidrone. Yeah. One thing that I just wanted to elaborate on for you guys. You mentioned when you were originally coming up with Titan Brawl, it wasn't going to be a MOBA game, and it sort of transitioned through development. And that's a talk, or that's a topic that I wanted to bring up, and it's one we like to talk about here on the cast, because for a lot of people listening, it's the whole concept of game development is still that very mysterious element. So I just wanted to, I guess, if you wouldn't mind elaborate on that, like, how did Titan Brawl sort of evolve into becoming a MOBA on the mobile device over the course of its development?
Well, I think it's just natural choices. Basically, like, we started with an idea, and then so we basically do a prototype, and then we see that this is not really working, but this is really amazing, so we start to focus on what is super amazing, and then we test again, we prototype again, and then little by little, it just becomes something that you actually didn't expect at all.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out to be, I don't know, a city builder, or it turns out to be a MOBA.
Mm-hmm.
But then when it became very close to what we have now, it was pretty clear that all the competitiveness of the game was very MOBA-like. Mm-hmm. And actually, we have a lot of MOBA players, so when we started to say, oh, actually, it's really a MOBA, and it can be like the MOBA for mobile, then at this point, we really had this vision. But when we started, basically, that was not the point. And I think this is very important. When you create a game,
mm-hmm.
or when you create anything, usually starts thinking, okay, I will want to do this thing, but then you have to evolve and you have to adapt. And when you test what you have, then you have to take the right choices. To just go for the awesomeness, basically.
That's one of the best things about Titan Ball, is that it's a MOBA, but it's not a classic MOBA. Like, it has mobile values, but it's not. It's a MOBA that's been so
mm-hmm.
thought for mobile that it seems more casual. Like, it has all the intensity in 3 minutes,
mm-hmm.
which makes it quite unique.
Yeah. And I definitely want to... Oh, I'm sorry. We will definitely be talking more about Titan Brawl's design in the next minute or so. But I want to go back to what Damian just said, because I think that's a really good point about this, about developing a game over the course of its whole time frame. For people listening to this cast, game design is not something that you don't know exactly how a game's going to turn out from beginning, middle to end. And that's one of the things that I think has been one of the many common themes on these casts and developer interviews. And I think what you just said, Damon, is a perfect fit there, that you have to be willing to, I guess, adapt and change your game as things grow and change. Because again, you have no idea, you know, from beginning to middle to end, what your game's going to be like. And it is the same for any developer, I think, within any platform on the market.
Yeah, basically the way I see the game design is that I'm not making the game for myself. I'm making the game for other players. Yeah. So there are a lot of things I would really like to be in the game, but I know that the players will either not understand, or they will think it's weird, or they will just say it sucks. Mm-hmm. And I don't want the players to play something and say, oh my god, it sucks. Mm-hmm. So rather than just doing my super ego stuff with my super cool ideas, mm-hmm. I just show the game to the players, and then if they think it sucks, then it sucks, because at the end I will play the game a lot, mm-hmm. but most of the game will be played by the players. I think it's the heart of game design, yeah. Basically. It's important that to really realize that you don't do something for yourself. Of course, we as designers, we have a huge ego, and we want our super cool ideas to be in the mm-hmm. game. That's always the case. But at the end, when you release the game, you want the players to enjoy it. Mm-hmm. So if it has to change, it has to change.
Yeah, and I think that's a fantastic point there, Damon. We've definitely spoken about that in the past, with this idea that as game developers, especially for indie studios where you're basically operating on your own, you have to balance essentially these two mindsets of the artist and the businessman. As you said, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter if you love your game, if every one of your players says, you know, this sucks, I don't want to play it.
Yeah.
And there's that balance between making something and being passionate about it, but also being willing to, you know, expose it to a general audience, understand that, oh, they may not like this, let me, you know, adjust my design so if it makes this game a lot more enjoyable for them, let me do that so we can have a greater audience and we can have more people enjoying this game.
Definitely. It's also very important to have a vision and say, okay, mm-hmm. I want to build this kind of game and this kind of game, or I fucking hate this mm-hmm. idea, this is awful. I think it's totally valid. It's still a balance between just adapting and what you want to do as a creator, because at the end of the day, we're also creating something. So it's not only the players, but they decide. Yeah. They decide, basically.
Mm-hmm. I guess here's a question for you that I'm sure any developers listening to this cast would probably be interested in. As you guys were testing Titan Brawl and, again, exposing it to a large audience, were there any examples of changes or things that the audience asked you about that you didn't even think of that you decided to change or add to the design?
Well, to be honest, there are like hundreds of examples. So it can go from the powers of the characters. We also used to have something which we called the common zone. So basically, when you arrive in front of the totem, mm-hmm. Then the two lanes are in the same zone, right? Mm-hmm. So the heroes can attack each other and so on. And for us, it was like it was pretty important in the strategy, because you couldn't deploy in the lane and then still defend the other and so on and so on. So it was pretty important for us. But then at some point, we realized that basically, the players, they thought it was a bug. So we just removed it, mm-hmm. and just nobody really saw that we changed this thing. Mm-hmm. Even for us at the beginning, it was very important for the strategy. Mm-hmm. But then after showing it to the players, it didn't even realize that it was changed. It was so nonsense for them that they thought it was a bug.
And it's kind of weird when we talk about these discussions like that. I've spoken to other developers who've had like similar stories where they'll have something in the game that they thought was this, you know, this pivotal action that the players would like get into and enjoy. And then the players are just like, you know, that's a thing in the game. Like,
or they just ignore it or,
All right. I know we're definitely moving along here, but I think that's a good segue into talking more about Titan Brawl. And then probably for our main topic after that, I want to definitely talk to both of you about MOBA design in general. But I guess we've been talking a little bit about Titan Brawl for people listening to this cast who haven't heard of the game or didn't read our interview, for them, what, if you wouldn't mind, just like, what is the pitch of Titan Brawl? What is someone going to do if they download your game?
So basically, you have a 3 minute fight mm-hmm. where you can control four heroes mm-hmm. against four heroes. So you can choose in which lane you can deploy the hero, either the top or the bottom. Mm-hmm. And the goal is to destroy the opponent totem. And during the gameplay, you will deploy your heroes and you will deploy their power-ups. Mm-hmm. So the whole strategy is to decide where to deploy the hero, mm-hmm. but mostly where to use your power-up, because the power-ups are limited by your mana. So every time you use your power-up, then you will have to be sure that it's used efficiently, like at least more efficiently than your opponent. Okay. So it's basically 3 minutes of battle, mm-hmm. Pretty intense, more and more intense over the battle, mm-hmm. and you need to destroy the opponent. And it's 90% PvP, so it's like mm-hmm. pretty intense and a bit stressful sometimes.
Mm-hmm. And just to clarify for the people listening, the match, as you say, you're choosing four heroes. Is the play one player versus another player, or is it like 2-on-2 or anything like that?
Yeah, it's one player versus one player. Mm-hmm. So you control four heroes, and the opponent controls four heroes, and that's it. So it's not something like Vainglory or Dota, where you have your own hero and you control fully what he does. Mm-hmm. It's more higher level strategy and control.
Okay. And you said that your boards are, I think you said, two lanes wide or two lanes large?
No, sorry, there are two lanes in total.
Okay. And I was looking at your site, and I'm remembering from our chat, our interview a few months ago, that another major part of Titan Brawl is kind of like the CCG-esque aspect of collecting these heroes, and again, trying to create, like, I guess your quote-unquote deck of what four heroes you take into a battle. Mm-hmm. What would be, I guess, for people listening, like, how, if you wouldn't mind describing a little bit more about sort of like that CCG aspect of Titan Brawl?
So it's pretty similar to Clash Royale, let's say, to give a wide overview. Mm-hmm. So you have these four heroes, but you pick among 32 characters right now. Mm-hmm. So you pick your totem, you choose your heroes among the one you have. They have different rarities mm-hmm. and different levels. So when you earn tokens, you can upgrade their levels, and then they get a bit stronger. So how much stronger? It's an important question. When you look at many games in CCG, mm-hmm. The level 1 compared to level 100, the level 1 has absolutely no chance.
Yeah.
We decided to avoid this as much as possible. So you have an advantage if all your guys are level 10, but it's not huge. In Clash Royale, I think it's like the guy is twice better. Mm-hmm. For us, it's much, much less. Mm-hmm. So the skill is still way more important than the level. It helps for sure, mm-hmm. but the skill is still like way more important than most other games.
Mm-hmm. Do the different heroes, like when they level up, do they gain like any different powers, or when a level 1 hero in terms of their like utility and their powers is the same as a level 10 hero?
Yeah, it's the same power. So you can improve the level of the hero, and then you can improve the power of the hero, but it will always stay the same. Mm-hmm. So actually, this is something we used to have. When you were level 1, you had just a very simple power, and then over time, over the levels, you were unlocking more powers and more powers. Mm-hmm. But then first, it became like very easy when you were level 10. Yeah. So it was very, very pay to win. And the second was, it was just becoming a huge mess. Mm-hmm. So we decided to go for something more simple and more clean. Mm-hmm. So it's like better understood by the players.
Yeah. And that's a really good point. One that we see, especially in games built on either like a competitive aspect or especially in something like a CCG or mobile based mm-hmm. design, that it's very risky to have that kind of persistence mechanics when you're building a game that's supposed to be like a competitive take. Because as you said, if, you know, someone automatically has a chance at winning just simply because they play more, they spent more money, it's going to drive away new players because they're not going to want to play a game where they're in trouble or they're going to lose simply because someone has just been playing longer than they are. It doesn't matter what their strategy is.
Yeah, that's really tricky. I remember my experience in Hearthstone, and so I was not really good. That's one point.
Me too. Yes,
and I never. I just couldn't build good decks. Mm-hmm. Anyway, but then you really reach this this wall where you are like, you know, okay, I cannot go further in the main mode.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that I was kind of stuck.
Yeah.
And this is something that our players might experience, but I think it will come after a pretty long time. The one thing which is pretty important as well is that we are first very generous with the players, so they can get a lot of tokens, a lot of free materials. Really, yeah, for free. It's not like it's not like crazy monetization, and also the skill really matters. So yes, if you have this character, you will have a higher chance, but not as much as many games.
Yeah, and I just made a post on Game Wisdom about this. I think by the time, for those of you listening to this cast, by the time this cast goes up, it'll probably be about 2, maybe 3 weeks ago, about why I just gave up playing Hearthstone. And I just, I basically talk about my experiences with the game. And again, as you said, it becomes like that pay-to-win wall is something that you really need to avoid with any kind of competitive-based game.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't think you can really fix this because, at some point, if you say that you don't have a paywall, then there is absolutely no pay. It's the balance is tricky.
Yes.
The balance is tricky, but I would say compared to many games, it's much simpler in our case. So, for instance, I will give you an example. I have a friend who is not a very huge gamer, and so I play with all my friends, and this one very specifically, he doesn't play so much. And I think he's reaching these points, but he's in elites. He's in the highest rank. So basically, he could reach the highest rank, but now he cannot be in the top one, top 10, because he doesn't have the skills and the gaming experience to reach the top 10. In the other hand, when I was playing Hearthstone again, I was horrible. I was reaching this wall at rank 20 or 19. You know.
Yeah. And
so solving it completely, I don't think it's possible, but at least you can try to not make it like very rough very quickly.
Yeah, and that's definitely one of the bigger points. Another topic we talk about is sort of like the player's first experience with your game is so critical. As we've said on previous casts, it's like really like the first 15 to 30 minutes is pretty much the make it or break it point. If the player is already being, the player's already feeling frustrated, and you know their first experience with your game, or especially with a competitive game, is fighting against other players who, you know, they've, as we said with Hearthstone, you know, they have every card imaginable, or they've been building meta decks or net decks for the last 2 months, and this is the first time you're playing against them. It's going to drive them away. And again, once you lose a player, they're not going to come back to try your game again in 2 months or 3 months down the road.
Actually, I think we have the opposite problem. Right now, our first user experience is it's so we wanted to avoid like frustration and all these things, because yeah, when you arrive in a game, you don't want to be to be smashed by someone. But then I think we went a bit too far, and now it's getting a bit boring. So I guess you know the flow theory from Genova Chain, right? The just being between boring and too hard. And right now we're basically just too nice with the players. It's just way too simple. So this is something. So
people in the beginning, once they get into the game,
they get
hooked. So I guess the first 20 minutes gives a wrong impression that the game is going to be repetitive, and then it isn't. But now it's a challenge we're facing at the moment.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's something I think we will not be done in the next week or in the next month. It's So we launched the game something like 6 months ago in a very early version, but still 6 months ago, mm-hmm. and we're still working on it. It's something that you have to work on this all the time, I think, because it's the probably one of the most important things. Yeah. What is very frustrating, I think, for us right now is that the first user experience is kind of too weak, or maybe let's say too easy. Mm-hmm. And when I see the first user experience, it's like it's showing nothing compared to what the game has to offer. But then if you show too much, then the players are overwhelmed and so on. Especially in mobile, you have to be very careful with this. So it's something we're gonna work on for maybe 3 months, maybe even 1 year.
Mm-hmm. And that's actually a very interesting point there, Damien. For those of you listening to this cast. By the time you're listening to this cast, over like the course of November, I kind of went CCG crazy. I've been trying out like 4 or 5 different CCGs on the market. So I've been playing Duelist, Shadowverse, Pharah, and Elder Scrolls Legends. So that's 4 different CCG games with 4 different, completely different sets of rules and tutorials. And I was seeing, like, I'm actually thinking about making a post or a critical thought video about this, that there's 4 different kinds of tutorial methodology going on. And as you said, there is that balance you really need to strike with that tutorial or with the opening part of your game. If it's too easy, people will either not be properly prepared and then they'll start playing online. It's like, oh my God, you know, what the hell am I supposed to do? Mm-hmm. Or it's too boring. But then on the flip side, if you throw a 90-minute tutorial at someone that explains every little facet of your game, they're going to be asleep, or they're just going to be like, I don't want to, you know, spend 90 minutes of my life. I don't even know if I'm going to like this game. Why should I go through this massive tutorial for your title?
Yeah. It's very tricky balance. Mm-hmm. It's very tricky balance. And there is no you can find a lot of material online to see some best practices are you should do this and this and this, but it really depends on the game.
Yeah.
So it's always relearning. There are some stuff you should avoid, of course. Like if you have a pile of text in the very first thing, most of the players they will not like it. So maybe these kind of thing are useful, but in general it's always different.
Yeah, I think I was speaking to another developer, Mark Ventrali, he did the game Star Vikings, which was like a game, it was sort of like combining like tower defense, like almost like a reverse tower defense. And he talked about one thing that he was learning, that I think there was like a rule that you should not have more than like, I think like 11 or 12 words of text in like a single paragraph, especially for the mobile market. You want to try and make things as clear and as concise as possible.
Yeah. It might sound a bit like downgrading your game because you don't want to put so much and so on, but I mean, we're all humans. If if you see something huge, you don't treat it. It's the same everywhere in your life, like Facebook or anything in the streets. It's it's tough.
Mm-hmm. And from my own experience, maybe like I said, I'll turn this into a post or a video soon. All the CCGs that I play, I think I really like the tutorial behind Shadowverse the best out of the ones that I've played. It's very quick, and I think it's the only one that I saw that actually tried to teach you a little bit of the philosophy of playing the game in its tutorials. Like, this was the first time that I saw a tutorial for a CCG that said, oh, don't attack this guy. You know, set up a unit with ward or taunt so that you'll protect your unit. I was like, oh my goodness, this game's actually teaching me CCG mechanics. It's a miracle.
So they give you kind of strategy tips to start to make you think, okay, then I would check it out, because that's a problem we have as well. Because there is, I think there is a lot of strategy in the game. Okay, not as crazy as a PC strategy game, but there is a lot of strategy, but a lot of players do not get it. So maybe I will check it. So maybe there is like they found a way to trigger the strategic brain of the players. Mm-hmm. Then you start to think strategically.
Yeah.
Cool.
Now, one other point that I wanted to ask you about is, we said with this idea of the CCG aspect of Titan Brawl, and you mentioned that you have different heroes of different rarities. As we've seen in CCG design, different rarities of cards can represent different things depending on the game or genre. And for instance, in Hearthstone, as we know, a lot of the legendaries aren't just, you know, flat out, they're always better than the other cards. They usually have some kind of special power or something that you build the deck around. With Titan Brawl, how did you approach, I guess, designing your different heroes when we're talking about, you know, a common hero versus whatever you can, whatever your highest tier of heroes or your highest rarity is?
So basically, the first, the rarity makes the hero stronger, like and it's something you expect as well. It was so we didn't have rarity when we first launched the game, but then at some point we realized that it was, the rarity was good for the players to see, okay, this guy, it's more rare, so he will be stronger. So it's also just a tip. But then if you play only epic cards, you should not be supposed to win, or there should be a best way to win. So let's say let's say Sabrina, for instance, she's extremely popular because first she looks great, and she's also very strong, but she's also very weak in a way, because if you get a stun in front of it, like any DPS, if you get a stun, she can be smashed super easily. So all the heroes, they have their counterparts, and if they if you play all the rare guys together, it's probably not the best strategy. For instance, you might want to give some very good protection to Sabrina, or, you know, this kind of small tactics.
And do you have like a rock paper scissors kind of design with like your heroes? Like, does one kind of hero be another kind of hero, that kind of thing?
So we don't have like very strict rock paper scissors. Let's say this hero has a bonus of 20% damage against this one. I don't like this kind of design so much, because it's a bit fake. You know, it's like just a rule that the designer is putting. You know, so for me it should be more natural rock paper scissors. So since we have different types of powers, we obviously have this kind of thing, but it comes naturally. So, for instance, I read an article in Overwatch saying that every hero, they designed it in a way that they have these counterparts and these guys working well with them. And it's basically exactly the same logic. If you play, so, and it comes naturally again. So if you have a DPS, a stunner in front will be perfect. Or if you have a guy who is only single targets and you put it in front of minions, like our guy making clones, it's not the best idea. So we have this, and that's also how we balance the characters of, okay, this guy has five counters, this guy has 10. So it's also part of the weaknesses.
Yeah. And that's definitely a smart way of designing. As you said, Overwatch is a really good example of that. And again, it's not about, like, as you said, it's not about a specific hard counter, as in this character is just naturally better than this one because of, again, as you said, like, example, like, this one just automatically does 30% more damage. Instead, it's about the tactics and the functionality of that unit. Like, in Overwatch, for instance, like, a character like Reaper is superior in close range. But naturally, if you have a character who's more mid to long range, or something like Roadhog, who can, you know, pull and kill him before he has a chance, that would be a natural defense against it, but it's not a arbitrary defense. It's more of like, just like the organic flow of the game.
I think what is very cool in what they did is, so if you take Bastion, for instance, I really like it because I'm not an FPS guy, so for me it's very easy to play. But if you take this guy, he has a lot of counters. So that means on the paper he's kind of weak because a lot of people can kill him. But if you look at the DPS he does, it's like super, super strong. So basically he's extremely weak but extremely strong at the same time. I think it's a way of designing which is inspiring and very, very, very smart, basically.
Yeah, and again, when you pair him with a team that can support him, it also then just adds to, and just like as you said, with a game like Titan Brawl, you're picking four heroes, and that's essentially your quote unquote deck or your army for that specific match.
Yeah. But I think we can do even a better job on this side. But we are like updating the game every week. Mm-hmm. But this is something we tend for sure.
Yeah. All right. I think I have a few, I guess, quick general questions of more focusing on Titan Brawl, and then we'll probably move into our final topic, and that's talking more overall about MOBA development.
Mm-hmm.
So, as we said with Titan Brawl, and I just want to reiterate, the game, did you say that the game launched worldwide like about 2 weeks ago from this recording, or has it been a little longer than that?
So the iOS launch, like worldwide, was on the 28th of October.
Okay.
Right?
So.
No?
When worldwide was around 2 weeks.
Oh.
Actually, I can give you the exact date right now. 1 second.
I know, okay, with game development, like time has no meaning when you're making a game.
Yeah. Especially in mobile games, because you know when you do the global launch, mm-hmm. so in the classical PC games, it's like, oh cool, we are done, we finished the game. Mm-hmm. But for us, it's basically just the beginning. So
yeah.
Like the game being launched or not, it doesn't make a huge difference. Mm-hmm. The only thing is there are players playing it live.
It was on November 10th, approximately.
Okay.
So
like 2 weeks. We launched on both platforms. But we were featured first in iOS, and now we're being featured in Google.
Okay. Yeah, and as you just said, Damien, especially with what we're seeing, even on the indie or PC side of things, a game these days is not just release and then it's one and done, you move on to something else. We are definitely seeing this trend towards long-term game development, where people are expecting, you know, constant kind, especially if it is a multiplayer or competitive-based game. You cannot just release that and then, you know, don't do anything else for it if you expect a game like that to thrive and grow.
Yeah. It's something we also see more and more in PC. I think that the term that some guys would use is a game as a service.
Yes.
Actually, it makes total sense, because when I see myself when I'm into a game and I'm really into it, I will play like crazy. And if there is something which really bugs me, and if it bugs every player, and then that I see that the company is not doing anything, it's like, what the fuck, guys? Like, everyone is telling you this is wrong. Maybe you should do something about it. So I think it makes a lot of sense for the companies to work on the live game. But it's also really tough. Like from the inside, it's pretty tough. The thing is, like, you know, let's say you draw something, or let's say you read a book, then you have a feeling of accomplishment. Like, I finished this book. I finished this comic or this drawing. And this feels great, because it's like basically like finishing a game, you know. It's like, oh, cool, I finally finished it. Mm-hmm. But then when you work on game as a service, you feel like you are never done, you know. And this misses me a lot, actually.
Yeah.
This is tough.
Yeah, I know. And as we said with like the previous examples, like CCG games, especially those that are being designed for the long term. I mean, Hearthstone has another, for those of you listening to this cast, Hearthstone's next expansion, I think, is due out, I think, in like a month or so at this rate. And as you said, it's not a game that, you know, there's an end screen that you can say, okay, I'm done, let's move on to something else. People who play games like Hearthstone, League of Legends, Shadowverse, you name it, there are people who've been there since day one, and if they're still enjoying that game, they're still playing it today. And there's always that push and pull between making your game appealing to people who've never looked at your game before, while still adding stuff for those guys who have been playing it for 6, 7, 8 months, or even years for some of these titles.
Yeah, it's really hard to focus. Like, what should I do? Should I work for these very very old players, or should I work for the new guys coming?
Mm-hmm.
It's a question you ask yourself every day. Mm-hmm. It depends on what you want to achieve. But at any point of the project, the old players are always pretty important. For instance, we just released the game, but we have very old players, and so basically, what the focus should be 100% for us, from a business point of view, would be all these new players, because there are like many of them. Mm-hmm. But still, we make new characters for the old players. Mm-hmm. We rebalance the very late units, it's they are always important to us.
Mm-hmm.
Even though in a business point of view, it would not make so much sense.
Yeah. And again, it's that balance. You have to have, this is based on other posts that I talked about, that for any kind of competitive-based game, you need both a casual and a core audience. Your game really can't thrive with just one or the other.
Yeah. And on mobile, it's pretty tough because you want this niche audience, like super into the game.
Mm-hmm.
And, so if you want these guys, you need to provide them something they like, you know? And,
yeah.
So you have to be very deep. You have to rotate the strategies. You have to, feed them something. But at the same time, you need, all these new players and, having both, something, easy to understand, hard to master on mobile. It's super tough.
Yes,
but also super interesting from a design point of view.
Mm-hmm. All right. I guess a few, as I said, just a few more. I guess questions just relating to Titan Brawl itself. One thing we didn't touch on, as you said, the game is very friendly in terms of, you know, not being heavily monetized. Mm-hmm. But I know, especially for the people listening to this cast, my audience, we've definitely have been burned by a lot of games, especially in the free-to-play market, and those titles that have gone the heavy monetized route. So, with Titan Brawl, and either of you feel free to answer this one, what is, I guess, your monetization model for the game? Like, what is someone going to be spending money on if they play Titan Brawl?
So basically, when you monetize, you will get boxes, and these boxes will give you tokens, mm-hmm. and provide you new heroes.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the basic model, and on the paper, that's why the players are supposed to buy. Mm-hmm. But I deeply think that the guy who pay are not stupid people. They know that they saw it before that they can be tricked and so on. So I think you need to build the trust basically.
Mm-hmm.
If the Civilization VI is horrible, I will stop going for the VII and the, okay, maybe not because I'm really into it, but mm-hmm. you see the point. Like,
mm-hmm.
if you basically tell the players that they're going to be scammed, then there is no way they will really monetize. So at mm-hmm. the end, we end up mm-hmm. In a place where it's good for the designers, the players, and also the monetization people mm-hmm. to just focus on making a good game. And when you make the good game, then you gain the trust from the players,
mm-hmm.
and then the players will be more like, okay, I spent like 1,000 hours on this game, maybe I will put $10. Mm-hmm. But I really believe in this model. I think, and it's totally valid that many people will say that, that I'm wrong. It's fine, but, I think the players are very sensitive to just having a high quality game.
Yeah, and I agree with you with that one, Damien. A recent example that I talked about would probably be League of Legends, and how when it first came out, Riot was not making all that much money on the game. They mm-hmm. again, they were focusing on making a superior product, and as you just mm-hmm. said, making something that people are going to want to play. And I think that's one of the things that we saw there was that they focus on long-term success rather than short-term mm-hmm. profit. And it has certainly, I think, paid off for them.
Yeah. I believe in this strategy as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think so maybe that was not the case, let's say, 3 years ago, because there were a lot of new players and it was a new platform. So mm-hmm. everyone was excited and so on. But mobile is maturing a lot. The players are mm-hmm. changing a lot. And now they played many games and now they want very quality games. So if you are just here and try to scam them on the short term,
mm-hmm.
I think there is no way you're gonna do anything.
Yeah, and that's definitely a great point. And easily talking about the mobile market, that will probably be another hour, I think, with the three of us here.
Yeah.
I guess to wrap up this section, then, I guess talking about Titan Brawl. As we said, the game has been out worldwide for about 2 weeks now, and I think I may have asked you this, Nura. When we did the email interview, but are there any plans on bringing Titan Brawl to other platforms like the PC, or do you see it staying with the mobile and iOS market?
Well, it's just Titan Brawl is very well designed for mobile,
mm-hmm.
so I think it wouldn't be I don't see the point in being on a PC at the moment, I don't think.
In the other hand, it would look amazing on PC.
Yeah, the graphics would be amazing, but I don't think the game itself can works on a PC because it's very well designed for a mobile lifestyle. So you play 3 minutes, and when you have 3 minutes, but I don't know.
Especially with the size of the team, if you want to go to Steam, then it's it means like people working on it. On the other hand, I would love this. We have so we play internal tournaments in the team to test the new players, new balancing, and so on. And what we do is we put the game on TV, and it's just amazing. It's super cool to play it on TV.
Yeah,
but now it's more a matter of where to focus.
Yeah. A bit of the system, the battle system. Yeah, making them longer, adding a bit more.
Yeah,
that would be tough, but it would be amazing.
And that's always a very tricky challenge, especially as we said in today's market, where I've spoken to developers who have gone PC first and say they're never going to put their game on mobile. Mobile developers who've gone PC, and it is two completely different markets. And there's always that risk. Something that succeeds on the PC may not succeed on mobile, and vice versa. And it is a very it's very interesting challenge. And again, it's a very complicated topic to talk about. And as you said, with something like Titan Brawl, it's not just from a mechanic standpoint of having to translate this game from something that was designed explicitly for the mobile market, mobile design, mobile UI, but putting on the PC. And then there's obviously the work that goes into making essentially a PC version of your own game.
I think so. Even if right now for us it doesn't make how to say it's pretty tough. Like it would be pretty tough for us to put it on PC right now. I think at some point we will tend to do that. And when I say at some point, it's like in years. You know, it reminds me of before we're saying okay, FPS games on console doesn't make sense, or doesn't make sense to go on two platforms. But still, now if a game is only on PC or only on console, it's kind of weird. And from a business point of view, it's also kind of a waste. So I think it will be exactly the same for mobile. Yeah. It started a bit. It will take some time, but I think at some point we'll tend to this, like, or maybe some versions. But I think at some point we'll tend to having console, PC, and mobile at the same time. It's pretty tough from a design point of view. It's kind of a nightmare if it doesn't start from the beginning, but. We'll probably tend towards this.
Yeah. I think that is a good way to go, to get it built to a point of stability on one platform before you start working on platforms 2 and 3. We saw something similar with the Darkest Dungeon, which went from the PC to the console. I think they're eventually going to work on a mobile and iOS version of the game, but they wait until their main version was pretty much completely done from a foundation standpoint. They knew exactly what the game was going to be like. They knew all the mechanics and systems were in place before they decided to port it over. Because you don't really want to be doing cross-platform development while you're still developing your original version, especially with the indie space, especially with smaller teams.
I mean, for an indie... For an indie, it's really tough.
Yeah.
I think it's also valid to say from the very beginning, we're going to go on every platform. I would not be surprised if Blizzard started Hearthstone thinking, okay, we're going to go everywhere, because I remember the very first control on PC. And when you were seeing the controls, you were like, okay, this totally fits for mobile. And I think they even say when they released on PC that they will work on it. So at the end, it's from a design point of view, it's much easier if you start and say, okay, I would go in every platform, because then you can think about everything at the same time rather than trying to patch it when you want to go on the other platform. From a technical point of view, it's another story. You basically have to rebuild everything.
Yeah,
almost.
Mm-hmm. All right. I guess. With that, let's move on to our final topic. I figure we'll spend maybe another, I want to say maybe 10, 15 minutes, if that works for both of you.
Sure,
We'll talk more, I guess, about general MOBA design. Because like I said, you're the first guest I've had who've worked on a MOBA, and it's a genre that has certainly grown in popularity. As you said at the beginning of the cast, everyone on the team are big fans of the MOBA genre.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And actually that's a pretty hard part because so when you are a designer and you want to make a MOBA, then you refer to all these MOBA mechanics. Mm-hmm. And if you're an artist, you want to have all the details and all the cool effects of the game you play. But then when it comes in the small device, then it's pretty tough. Mm-hmm. So first when when you start, the first thing you have to remember is, okay, I really have to make it for the device I'm working with. And this is the first step, which is pretty tough.
Mm-hmm. So I guess, yeah, definitely. And as fans of MOBAs, you also have the challenge of trying to create something that is innately unique to you guys while still trying to adhere to sort of the standards and the foundations that we've seen in games like League of Legends, Dota, etc.
Mm. Yeah, it's this is really tough. There are many as we said at the beginning, there are many things we just removed in the game because players just didn't understand. Mm-hmm. And so it's a bit frustrating for a designer, but it's also something you have to do. So yeah, it's just a balance between all the cool ideas and all the strategy you can bring and can actually the players understand what's going on.
Yeah. And that kind of takes me to, I guess, one of several questions I have for you guys regarding designing a MOBA experience. I guess the first one would definitely be the hero design. As we've talked about over the last mm-hmm. section throughout the cast, you guys have combined elements of CCG and elements of MOBA. And as we've seen with the big name ones like League of Legends and Dota, the hero design is a pivotal point of creating a game that is interesting, and at the same time, you're basically creating all these different characters that are going to have to interact with each other, going to have to fight, and more importantly, you have to design them in a way that they're interesting, but not, you know, one character is always the best character. And we talked a little bit about this with our example of Overwatch, but to elaborate on here, how did you and the rest of Omnidrone approach, I guess, hero design? Like, what did you want your heroes to do? And how did you, I guess, design them to avoid the ever-popular one-hero-beats-all kind of example?
And actually, to make them not too popular, it's really tough. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, we had a guy who is called Chi-Chi. It's a pretty cool panda. And this guy is super overpowered. He can basically do everything. So mm-hmm. we nerfed the guy, and then everyone on Facebook, Twitter was complaining about it. Mm-hmm. But then we also have access to the numbers of the game, and we saw that still all the players were using this guy. So for us, it matters that what the community says. We also look at the numbers, and we look at how we play together. Mm-hmm. But overall, it's a very complex topic for live units. Mm-hmm. One thing that we never hesitate to do is just to completely redo a character if it's not popular. So we have a couple of characters right now, and they are just not cool. So mm-hmm. Their power is not bringing so much. Actually, on the paper, they are extremely strong, but still the players are not playing them. Mm-hmm. And it's not just a matter of being super strong. It's also what is the power doing? Like visually, is it appealing? Is it clear? And so it's a mix of the strengths, but also the perception. Mm-hmm. And then for the new characters, then this is an entire new story. But in short, it's we look at the state of the game and we see, okay, we need this kind of character absolutely, like mm-hmm. a guy summoning minions or. We need a guy who is, creating mines or like all the key roles we miss. And of course, how they interact with each other. And then if you combine these plus the live characters, it basically gives you a huge meta game, which is always evolving. Mm-hmm. And that's the whole complexity. And overall, the way we approach it is, we basically talk together what we should get. I love this kind of character. Mm-hmm. We miss this kind of character. We talk with the community a lot, and to get their feedback, like the very high players, what they would like or which characters are strong. And we also look at the numbers to see mm-hmm. actually which heroes are played too much. Yeah. So it's a mix of many, many things. Mm-hmm. But at the end, I think from my point of view, what matters the most is that new characters are just cool to play. Mm-hmm. It sounds stupid, but it's super important. Like a guy doing something crazy, it's super cool to play with this kind of guy.
Mm-hmm. And then, as you said, the challenge then becomes fitting the new character in with all the older characters. And one of the things that we saw with League of Legends was that Riot Games had to eventually go back and patch and update these characters. And as we said, with long-term or with games as a service, you can't just leave things static. And it's always that evolving process. And I'm sure, as we saw with Overwatch for the last 2 months, they've been doing smaller updates with the characters. They've been releasing new characters. And as you said, sometimes it's just about having some kind of cool new mechanic or twist and then saying, okay, this seems cool, it's great for our game. Now, how do we build a character that's going to use this?
Yeah, I think when you can introduce a new character and it's bringing a whole new meta game, mm-hmm. then this is amazing. You know, like let's say all the teams are focused around this guy, and then you just release a new guy and he's completely killing this super strong hero, and then it creates a whole new flow and metagame between the heroes. Mm-hmm. This is just amazing. It's and as a designer, it's amazing to see, because you feel like your baby is kind of evolving all the time.
Yeah. Now, one point about Titan Brawl that I wanted to bring up here, and I think I kind of know the answer to this question already, but I want to reiterate here, is, as you said, the game is built around 3-minute matches. And that's one of the, I think, interesting things about the MOBA space, especially when you look at the big names, that these games can go on for a very long time. I've seen matches that can be 20, 30 minutes to hour-long grinds and gauntlets where you're tired by the end of it. As I said, I think with the design this for the mobile space kind of answers this question. But as you guys were building Titan Brawl, was the 3-minute time limit like always there, or did it take some designing and fine tuning to decide how long you wanted each match to be?
Well, actually, at the beginning of the launch, it was 4:30 for a very long time, mm-hmm. and so we always wanted to have something short, mm-hmm. Because basically when you're on mobile, you can have something which is 20 minutes. So for instance, we didn't want to make something like Vainglory where it takes 20 minutes. For us, it's that's not what we are shooting. We want very short matches, because then when you're on mobile, most of the time you don't have so much time to play. So we wanted from the very beginning to have short matches. So it was 4:30, and then at some point, it just came out to me that we could make it even shorter. Mm-hmm. Shorter than 3 minutes would be pretty tough, mm-hmm. but going from 4:30 to 3 minutes was actually pretty easy. It was just tuning the units, rebalancing, and mm-hmm. so on, and that was done. That was not so hard.
Mm-hmm. I assume to shorten the game up, you made like your heroes like do more damage or like lower like health and stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. It's at the end, it's mostly the totem, mm-hmm. because it's not that there are 3 minutes instead of 4:30 and you just condensate everything. It's just that you make the end easier to reach. Mm-hmm. So it's not like a faster pace and everything. It's just simpler to win or simpler to lose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's a really good point there, Damon. Because again, it's very easy, especially in the MOBA space, to make a game that's 20, 30 minutes long. You can do that with the durability of the characters, as you said, the strength of your totem or your base, whatever, you know, respective element is in the MOBA. But as you said, with the mobile market, you really do want that very quick engagement, something that's only going to be 3 minutes long, but it's so enjoyable that someone's going to spend another 3 minutes or another 3 minutes and so on. And, you know, those 3 minutes can become like a few hours, but it's still quick enough that someone just wants to play it, you know, on the bus or while they're waiting for someone. They're not going to have to commit to a 20-minute epic battle.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. I think for Vangry, I guess the designers are not seeing the way people play the game in the same way. So I'm pretty sure they don't expect people to play in the bus. Mm-hmm. I think they expect people to go on the couch and take their iPad and play like in a comfy way. It's just two different approaches. Now, I think Vangry is also totally valid as well. It's just a different way of playing.
Yeah. Now, another part of MOBA development I wanted to touch on, this one that we especially see in the PC side of things with League of Legends and Dota, is definitely keeping your community in check. As I'm sure you guys are no doubt aware of, it can be very toxic to play a MOBA and high-level competitive-based title. I've been witness to screaming matches and stuff like that. And for a time, League of Legends was considered one of the worst communities of players in the world. And Riot took a lot of great steps to mitigate and downplay that. Now, obviously with Titan Brawl, we're not dealing with, you know, high esports competitors at the moment. But as you guys were designing Titan Brawl, did you take any steps or did you pay attention to ways of, I guess, keeping players in check or, you know, keeping the community from getting too toxic?
Yeah. Actually, you know what? I think that's why I stopped playing Dota as well, mm-hmm. because the community is just too toxic in Dota. Mm-hmm. But yeah, coming back to Titan Brawl, I think it's for us, it's much easier because we don't have a chat. So first, mm-hmm. it's at least you can see that the players, they cannot insult you or anything. So when we started, there was absolutely no chats. And then I think it's a month ago, we started to implement just emotes. Mm-hmm. And the emotes are pretty basic. You have six of them. And even with this, the players were able to troll the other. Mm-hmm. So even if you have a very limited way to interact, the players can be very, very toxic.
Yes.
And if you want to completely avoid this, it's super tough. Mm-hmm. But we listen to the community a lot. Anytime they report a cheater, then we will check this guy like in the next 5 minutes. We are very committed in the community for like making them happy and talk to them, but also see their concern about all the toxicity and so on.
Yeah.
But the fact that we don't have a clear chat, it's also it's already like helping a lot.
Mm-hmm. And it's also like our 3 minute battles. There's not much you can say.
Yeah.
Mm. So you can share a few emojis, but that's it. You don't have enough time to type.
Yeah.
So I think this is another thing.
Yeah, and as we said, with a game like League of Legends or Dota, when you're 20, 30, 40 minutes into a match, there a lot can happen there. As I think we all are well aware of some things that can be said during one of those games.
Yeah. It's horrible. Actually, I think I read an article 1 year ago, but a woman who checked these people who were toxic, and actually she realized that it wasn't just that the guy was a douchebag. Mm-hmm. Most of the time, it was just one guy having a bad day, and mm-hmm. that was it. Yeah. But it's really hard to check. Mm-hmm. And in Dota or League of Legends, they can say so much. It's really tough.
Yeah. Now, another part I wanted to touch on here was talking more specifically about mobile design. And we've sort of been talking about this in bits and pieces over like the last hour or so. As you said, when it comes to champion design, and again, the long-term play, you're going to be adding in new champions. You're going to be changing the meta over, you know, could be a span of weeks, could be a span of months. And creating or affecting the meta of a game is a very interesting topic, and I know one that we definitely don't have the time to talk about today. That's probably a whole cast in of itself.
Yeah.
With Titan Brawl, especially with the meta itself, how are you, like, let me see if I can explain this. With a game like Hearthstone, for instance, there's always that constant battle of meta. We've seen this over the last few years, that every time a dominant strategy comes out, Blizzard will do something to correct it. And then when a new card comes out or new pack, the meta changes and a new dominant deck or dominant strategy comes. And it's always that unending battle. Now, with a game like Titan Brawl, obviously with the 3-minute time limits and the more simplified gameplay, you're not going to be dealing with a crazy amount of meta on that front. But for you guys, how are you approaching, I guess, dealing with or upsetting your meta as the time goes on, as, you know, dominant strategies are found, stuff like that?
So I think we have an approach which is slightly different from Hearthstone, mostly because of the fact that we don't release like 20, 50 new cards in one big update. Mm-hmm. So our approach is, I think, more similar to again Dota or League of Legends. It's just small tweaks you do regularly, and then you see if it's standing for the best. So basically, right now I have a plan of a new meta, which will happen over the course of the next 3 months. Mm-hmm. And then I will see what this meta will, how it will live, how, what will going on. And then I will tend with another meta. So basically you have one big plan for 3 months, and then a lot of small steps to see if you go really, towards this. So for instance, in Dota, they take a different approach, which is also valid, and that's actually what I wanted to do. Instead of doing very small steps, they just change a lot of things at the same time. I love this as a player because you just relearn everything, and it's pretty exciting because it's almost a new game for you.
Yeah.
But on mobile, if you do this, you have a very high chance that the players will be just super pissed. And if they are pissed, you know, they just go in the store and they have like 10 other games very easily. So you have still to be very careful.
Yeah. And again, especially with that kind of development plan of a meta, instead of, I like that idea of having a grand vision and then you're going to tweak and adjust things over a several month plan, as opposed to, again, just dropping a bomb on everyone and saying, okay, we're changing all this right now. And that's kind of things that we see with like a game like Hearthstone. With every new expansion, it's a bomb of new cards, new mechanics, new rules. And it completely destroys the existing meta. And then, you know, a month down the line, usually a month to 2 months, a new meta gets established. And as we said earlier in the cast, it always creates that ever-escalating challenge for new players to get into. I mean, I can't imagine someone brand new who's never played Hearthstone before jumping in right now and having a good time playing against players who, again, have been dealing with this for the last, I think it's like 2 years now, I think, for Hearthstone.
Yeah, 2 years. Yeah.
Man.
To be honest, I don't like this, let's call it business model so much, because it reminds me of my days of playing Magic, and it pissed me so much, because I was buying a lot of new packs and there were all these new cards and so on. And then a new edition comes in, and then you are like, okay, all my cards are completely useless now. So, I don't like this business model so much. On the other hand, it's, If it's easy to get the free new cards and so on, this is kind of valid because it's changing a bit. But if it's completely screwing all your investment for the last 6 months, it totally sucks for our players.
Yeah, if you just completely wipe the slate clean, everything they just did doesn't matter. And then, of course, when you start throwing in real money, it becomes very frustrating and annoying as well.
Yeah. So it was extremely this feeling was very strong in Magic. I don't know so much about Hearthstone because I quit playing a long time ago, but I think they tend for this. I hope they're not as strong as Magic in this regard.
Now, one other question that I wanted to just touch on, this should probably be a quick one. As we know, with designing these champions and building new content, it can certainly take time. So I'm curious, is there a, do you have a average, I guess, time frame for designing a new champion? Like how long, or a new hero? Like how long does it normally, or if there is a normal time from, you know, initial concept to putting it in the game?
So actually the design on paper per se is pretty fast. Mm-hmm. It will take a few iterations, like, oh, actually, I think this is not working so much and so on. But the design itself doesn't take so much. What will take time is the art and all the tweaking. Mm-hmm. Very often you realize, especially when you have kind of innovative game like Titanfall, you realize that this just doesn't work. Mm-hmm. I mean, I had these many, many times. I had to completely review the way the unit was working, because with our system, it was just pointless. Mm-hmm. So all the iterations take way more time. And all in all, I would say it takes around 1 month for one character.
Okay.
And so obviously we have a lot of new characters all together, but in different stages. But all in all, I would say something like a month, including the design, including the testing, including the art production, texturing, everything.
Okay. Oh, right. I think I have one more, I guess, general MOBA-related question for both of you, and then I think we'll probably begin to wrap up the cast after that.
Mm-hmm.
And this is another aspect of MOBA design that I wanted to touch on. That is the map itself. Again, as fans of MOBA, you're no doubt aware of the importance of the actual map that you're building. League of Legends mm-hmm. map, the Dota 2, and even in MOBA-like games. As we talked about with Titan Brawl earlier in the cast, you went with a two-lane, I guess, design for your mm-hmm. game. My question for you is, how did you, I guess, decide upon that kind of design for, like, your map? Or did you go through any other iterations or designs when you're building essentially the game space for Titan Brawl?
Well, actually, it started with just two lanes.
Okay.
So it's... It's something we didn't change so much, because the art changed a lot. We tweaked the map a lot, but the level design itself didn't change so much. What we do more and more, and what we did a lot in the last month was having different arenas.
Mm-hmm.
So it sounds a bit surprising, but in our game, if you have absolutely no tower defending the totem, or if you have one, or if you have two. It makes a huge difference in your strategy, because then instead of like being able to defend, if you make one mistake and there is no tower, you are done.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes quite a big difference. And the level design, actually, I think it will evolve a lot because we are actually able to create as many arenas as we want. Mm-hmm. The only constraint is to make something which is fun, basically, and understood by the players.
All right. I think with that, I mean, again, we can easily branch off into any number of topics, I think, with MOBA or mobile-related design. But I know we are over the hour, so we'll probably wrap things up in the next minute or so. So I guess my last question before we move into the final part of our cast then, and this is for both of you. Are there any parts of Titan Brawl that we didn't talk about, or any like topics relating to MOBA or mobile design that we haven't touched on that you would like to bring up or just talk about before we say goodnight?
Actually, the only thing I would say personally is just how amazing for a developer to make on a game which is very focused on the community.
I was just going to say the same. Like, I'm amazed at how the community is responding. We have so many YouTubers, so many streaming.
Mm-hmm.
They're organizing tournaments and seeing this huge meta game when the game just launched. Mm-hmm. And this positive response is amazing.
I think I never got excited more than the first time I saw Titans streaming the game live. It was amazing for me, for my developer life. I think that was the best thing I've ever experienced.
It's amazing. We get to build personal relationships with these people, because we know everything that's going on in their lives. They know about us. They've seen our faces. It's really wonderful.
Yeah,
and they see how the game works. Very often they even understand the game better than us.
Mm-hmm.
Because they are playing it so much. It's really incredible in many aspects. I think I will, for the rest of my life, I will just make game focused on community, mm-hmm. which like huge community potential. Because it's freaking amazing. Yeah.
And it's definitely one of the things we've talked about. Again, this is another hour-long topic, I think. But that kind of community interaction, that transparency that we see, has definitely become a staple of the independent market, be it on mobile or PC. And when you create that healthy community that loves your game and wants to see it grow, it really just... You know, it really becomes like kind of like that feedback loop that makes you want to keep working on the mm-hmm. game and keep growing it.
Yeah, yeah, totally. It's first, it's motivating you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, motivating. Yeah, I went last. yeah, it's very motivating because you see people like playing with your baby, and mm-hmm. this is just amazing.
Yeah,
and if you are a creator, that's what you aspire to do. So first, it's super motivating, but also to make the game better, mm-hmm. that's the best. So there is a limit of what a community can bring as feedback. There is always a limit, but they can bring so much in the balancing, in ideas, mm-hmm. in things that do not work. So it's not just user test. It's at every level of the game. Mm-hmm. The feedback loop with the community is super rich.
Yes, definitely. And as we said, when you're developing a game around a games as a service or a long-term game plan, your community is basically going to determine whether or not your game will live or die. And when you have that community behind you, it becomes very easy, or it becomes a lot easier to then sustain that development for months, or as we've seen in some cases, like with League of Legends and Team Fortress, over years of development and fan interaction.
Yeah, because if you, it's amazing to interact with them and so on. And let's say you have conversation with a businessman and he says, no, there is no point and so on. Mm-hmm. It's not true because, these guys, they are in the world we live in. Mm-hmm. It's also amazing as a business point of view because they can bring new players, they can make other players more excited and so on. So even from a business point of view, it can be useful.
Mm-hmm. All right. I think with that, again, I always like to say this on this cast. I think this has definitely been a great cast. I can feel that we can easily keep going and going and going. But yeah. I'm sure both of you do have to get going at some point tonight. I guess here's my final question. Again, I keep saying that, but this is one I think I kind of know the answer to, but I do just want to ask. As we said, the game has just been released 2 weeks ago, globally, I mean. Do you guys already have, as we've seen with, especially in the mobile space, there's always that tendency to rush to make the next thing for your studio. Do you see yourselves working on another game in the foreseeable future, or is it just going to be focused on Titan Brawl for right now?
We will work on other games, or maybe you are already working on other games. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to talk about this. But Titan Brawl will not be for sure. It will not be the only game of the studio. We will come up with new games later.
Okay,
for sure.
Awesome. All right. I think with that, we will begin to wrap things up. Again, thank you so much for both of you coming on tonight. I think this was a fantastic cast. And like I said, I definitely wish you guys the best of luck with Titan Brawl. It sounds fascinating.
Thank you.
And
thanks a lot.
If you guys do get around to getting this on the PC at some point, I would definitely love to check it out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, if you come around Europe, like, feel free to come over there.
Yes. Yeah.
Awesome. And at some point, I think I need to, maybe hopefully if things start working out, maybe I'll start globetrotting a little bit more.
Yeah.
All right.
That was nice. That was very nice from our part as well. Thank you.
Yeah, we're very happy.
Awesome. All right. So with that said, then, final thing I always end these casts on. Do you have any final thoughts or anything you'd like to say to the fans who may be listening to this cast?
Oh, just keep playing. That's it.
Yeah, keep playing. Keep sending us feedback.
Yeah, keep sending feedback.
Being like you are now because mm-hmm. you are awesome.
All right. I think that's a great note to end the cast on. So, for those of you listening, we're going to wrap things up here. Be sure to check out Titan Brawl, now available on mobile and iOS devices. And for us PC gamers, hopefully at some point in the future, as you said, could be a few years from now. But like I said, definitely keep me in mind when that happens.
Sure.
All right. As always, for those of you listening to this cast, thank you so much for tuning in. If you'd like to support Game Wisdom, we have several options available. If you'd like to write a guest piece for the site or be a future podcast guest, be sure to get in touch with me. You can find information and links under Submissions Wanted. We are always looking for new people to talk to, whether it be recorded here or for one of our many live discussions. Be sure to check out my Twitch and Twitter, both under GW Bicer, for when I do daily streams and daily thoughts for me throughout the day. Check out the Game Wisdom YouTube channel that is growing strong for daily videos on game development topics, as well as looks at a variety of games. And last but not least, you can find me on Patreon under Game Wisdom. Donations will be greatly appreciated. They will allow me to keep doing what I'm doing, and we can hit some goals. It'll mean more content for everyone. And of course, we have some nice rewards for you fine folks. So, once again, thank you so much for listening to this week's edition. And thank you, Damien and Nura, for coming on.
Thank you for inviting us.
Yeah.
Not a problem. So, with that said, thanks for tuning in. Hope you have a great rest of the week, and we will talk to you again next time. Take care.